Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's the SCB Steelers podcast presented by Deck Roofing Incorporated of South Florida. We are very proud to be part of the Variety Sports Network. And by the way, it's been 1 year since got the call from those guys. And thanks to them, they are an active bunch. I can't keep up with those guys on their text chat, man. They must be young. That's all I can figure out. They're just young. And anyway, the show, of course, does originate from the Bradshaw Bourbon Studio. So cheers, everyone. You will notice that it's just me and Ian tonight. Ian, how are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me okay? I had a little headset issue before we got on.
So far, so good.
Okay.
Yeah, we're cool. Good. Hi to Jen. Hi to Aaron. Jamie's in, and I know there's others watching, and thanks to everybody who is here live, but also thanks to those that check us out on your own time, whether you watch or just check up with the audio. We love it, and please continue to give us feedback and whatever you'd like. We are here for you. So it sounds like all this kind of happened in about the last 25 minutes. I think Scarps was trying to get home from work, but it's one of those days at work and it's not going to happen. Personally, I believe he's not here. I think he failed to write a Casey Kasem, but I'm just going to leave it alone. I don't know. And then Ben is having some internet issues tonight. We're hoping he can maybe jump on even just audio on the phone or something, but we'll see. Our plan tonight was to just really dive into the needs of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think there was a move already tonight that may have changed the board a little bit from what we were going to talk about. They kind of stole our thunder a little bit, but we'll get into that. Ian, what are you enjoying as a refreshment this evening?
So, I've got a little Conway's Irish Ale and I've got some, delicious Redemption Rye. So, nice little combination for a Thursday night. So
absolutely. And that's two of us on the Redemption Rye. What was the beer you're drinking?
Conway's Irish Ale. It's from Great Lakes Brewery.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I know Great Lakes, but I had not heard of that particular one.
It's their St. Patrick's Day seasonal. It's delicious.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. I will, I'll be cracking a Bell's, which of course is literally 15 minutes from my door here, the brewery, a Bell's, hazy IPA. They just make good beer. But there, I really have gotten into these hazy fruity beers, you know, like mango and stuff. But any case, if you didn't see it already, the Steelers signed tight end Michael Pruitt. By the way, does he say Michael or does he actually say Michael?
It's Michael.
That's what I thought. It's Michael and it's spelled M Y C O L E. But I can't keep track. In any case, he's going into his 11th season,
something like he's been around for a while. I remember the year he came out in the draft because there was I think it was him. It was Michael Walker, who was a linebacker for us last year, but there was four different ways that Michael was spelled in that draft.
You're right.
So that's my lasting memory of him, but he's been around for a while. He knows the Arthur Smith system and, Arthur Smith likes to use multiple tight ends. So, we've been talking about this, that they might add another tight end at some point, and this isn't a super great tight end draft class. So it doesn't surprise me that they went out and signed someone that has some familiarity with the offense.
I totally agree. And I'm just looking over his information here. Yeah. This will be his 11th season in the NFL. He four with Tennessee, two in Atlanta, two in Minnesota, one in Chicago, one in Houston. So, as you mentioned, a lot of familiarity with Arthur Smith's system. And I'm just going to get right to it here. Ian, what do you think this means for crowd favorite Connor Hayward?
I think kind of like last year, well, and some things transpired with another tight end last year that opened up a roster spot for Connor Hayward. But I think if he makes the team, it's in that kind of H-back type role again. Mm-hmm. You know, they might list him as a fullback, H-back tight end on the depth chart again. I think they still do actually right now, but they don't really have a true fullback. Arthur Smith's offense kind of sort of uses one, but Hayward isn't really a true blocking back. So I don't know. But the other side of it is, I mean, maybe they keep four tight ends. So you never know, because they don't have a lot of wide receivers right now either.
Good point. And do you remember when they last did that? Because I know they did keep four tight ends. I wouldn't say fairly, but it has happened under Tomlin. I'm positive of it. And look, I mean, I you know, Freiermuth is heading into the last year of his contract. So there's he was on a podcast with it was the 412, I think, which I don't mind promoting because that's a good friend of ours over there, Smitty. And he told those guys that obviously he wants to get something done and sooner rather than later, but his feels probably like it's going to be an August type of thing would be my guess.
Yeah.
And then of course you got Darnell Washington, and you know, we really expected to come into this show tonight talking a lot about needs and everything else. And tight end was going to be on our list. Ben and I have kind of been beating the drum, and I think you've been in some agreement there that there's a decent chance they were going to take a tight end somewhere in this draft. But now with the signing of Pruitt, that to me, in my opinion, I don't know if you agree, but I think it kind of takes it off their draft list.
Probably. Yes. Yeah. And Pruitt's a relatively athletic guy. He doesn't have a ton of size. I mean, he's only 6'2", but he put up some pretty good, you know, running numbers back in 2015 when he was at the combine. But nevertheless, you know, relatively athletic for a tight end. So we'll see how he fits in. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't really have a great number two right now. You know, Hayward can do a little pass catching, but he can't block. Washington can block, but doesn't offer you a ton as a receiver yet. I think he can develop that part of his game. Yeah. And Freiermuth has had injury issues, especially concussion issues, yes, which is kind of scary. So, you know, he's had a couple of those already in his career. How many more can he take? You know, it's that's not something that, like, you heal from and it's better. That can compound itself over time too.
Yeah. That's not a broken bone. That's pretty serious. And just looking at Pruitt's numbers here, this is not a guy that's going to get you a ton of catches, folks. I mean, you know, in recent years, he's been really durable. He's played 17, 13, 16, 11, 16, 15 games. But his receptions, you know, 9, 6, 5, 14, 16, 9, so clearly he is going to be coming on board as just a tight end, a guy, a guy familiar with the system, a guy that can help maybe a Darnell Washington, a Pat Freiermuth a little bit here. So I think it's a good signing. It's not one that anybody should be like, you know, over the moon for, especially at this phase of free agency.
We're not planning the parade over this.
So. No, I would not do that. But it is what it is. And if this allows them to focus on some other positions in the draft, then I'm totally for it. You know, because we still have needs. So before we get into that, Ian, I want to ask you a question. And I was going to start with this for all you guys tonight. Do you think Art Rooney II has changed his approach at all this particular offseason, or do you think it's just he's doing what he normally does, but Khan is different than Colbert, and that's why it feels different? I've been really trying to make myself think over this one.
Yeah, I don't I don't know how, and Ryan probably knows better than I do, you know, how much day-to-day involvement Rooney has with decision-making and things like that. I know they always talk about, like, you know, the sort of three-headed monster of Rooney, Tomlin, and the GM, whether it was Colbert or now Omar Khan, making decisions together, which has been a successful model for them in the past. But I don't know how much input he has on kind of day-to-day decisions. And really, I think the collective message that I've heard from all of them is they want to win a playoff game, and everything they've done this whole offseason is to get better and get themselves in a position where they can compete for a Super Bowl. And to compete for a Super Bowl, you have to win at least two, probably three playoff games. So unless you're fortunate enough to get the bye. So really, I think, you know, their focus has been as a whole looking at the roster and saying, what positions can we improve? Who's out there that we can sign, that we can get better at certain positions? We saw it at quarterback. We saw it at inside linebacker. And really, even going back to last year, right, they addressed the offensive line last year in a big way, you know, bringing in Seumalo, drafting Broderick Jones. So, and they cut Mason Cole this year. I think the big difference is, and I don't know if it's a Rooney thing, an Omar Khan thing, all of them together, but it seems like they're more willing to move on quickly from guys where in the past they may have hung on to them for a bit longer.
You're right. That's been a big difference from what we saw under the Colbert regime. So before I get to Jamie's point down here,
that is a good point that he
it is. And we'll come back to that. Is this a better football team right now than it was in 2023?
That's a great question. We're definitely better at the quarterback position, and that's where it all starts. If you're better at quarterback, you're probably a better football team. Do we still have holes? Yes, absolutely. We have 1.5 cornerbacks. We have 1.5 wide receivers. Maybe all right, maybe we have 2 cornerbacks. Dante Jackson's playing some snaps. So maybe we have 2 cornerbacks, but corner you need like 6. And wide receiver, you need at least 3, maybe 4. So there's definitely, we need a center, we need a right tackle. So there's still holes on this roster. We're not a finished product, but you know, sitting here at the beginning of April, I would say we're better at the beginning of April in 2024 than we were at the beginning of April, 2023. I would say that. I don't know, you know, when you look at the opening day, 2023 roster that went into that game against the 49ers and got shellacked. We're better at quarterback, but we also had a more complete roster where we had cornerbacks who had experience, where we had, you know, a full slate of wide receivers. And I have no doubt that we will get there by the beginning of September this year, but we still have the draft to go through. There's still more potential signings that could happen after the draft. You know, post June 1st cuts that teams might make. So training camp cuts. So I think the opening day roster will be better, but if I had to rank them, I would probably say, you know, opening day 2023 is slightly ahead of where we are right now, though our quarterbacks are better with Wilson and Fields than the triumvirate of suck we had last year. And then, you know, where we were as a roster at this point last offseason is trailing far behind.
You know, we should have had Dan at DC4L Custom Tees make that shirt for us. Triumvirate of suck. You know, okay, so Jamie mentioned in the chat that Pruitt, newly signed today, won't make the 53. Rodney Williams will get that last tight end spot if they do go with, well, 3.5 or 4, depending on how you want to classify Connor Hayward. I like Rodney Williams. I thought he did some nice things last year. I don't know that I would go that far yet. I want to see some training camp, see how things go, OTAs, training camp, and preseason. But I can see that. I can see Jamie's point totally. If he does continue to block well and you know can make catches on the few occasions he's going to see a target, which they're not going to be many, then yeah, I see it. And this is a perfect example of don't get overly excited about signings you see late in free agency, because a lot of these are, they're guys that probably aren't going to be around. You know, you look at Kez Watson and some of these other guys we've signed recently. Yeah, the hope is that they make the roster, but the reality is they might not. They might not.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And George brings up a good point, too, over in the chat about special teams, that it will come down to special teams. And I thought Williams did play well last year on special teams. Good point there, George. And to build off Jamie's point, too, about the, you know, Pruitt making the 53, I think that is one other difference we've seen with the Omar Khan era versus the Kevin Colbert era, that when Colbert signed a veteran in free agency, it was almost guaranteed he would make the team. Very true. I can list a bunch of guys that he signed that I was like, there's no way this guy makes the team. He's just there as a camp body. You know, Bryce McCain, Antoine Blake, and injuries played a role in Antoine Blake making the team, but that dude sucked except for that one pick six he had in that game against the Chargers. But nevertheless, like, he would sign these guys and then we'd be surprised that they made the team. We're like, how'd this guy make the team? But, you know, last year, Khan signed some guys and then they didn't make the roster. There was a whole bunch of linebackers, Tanner Muse, Nick Kwiatkowski, although I think Kwiatkowski got hurt in training camp or in the preseason game. But like Tanner Muse, a couple other guys that we signed to these one-year deals and they didn't make the team. So. There is no guarantee that Pruitt makes the team, but I think just kind of having him around in the building to help with that transition into the offense will be helpful.
Yeah, and when you're in your 11th year in the NFL, you're in most cases you're already past your expiration date, so to speak. In a lot of cases, obviously there's exceptions to that rule, but you know Pruitt's obviously had a very lengthy career, much more so than other guys at his age. If we turn to the draft for a minute, and you know, I know there's been some talk a little bit about Wiggins, the young man out of Clemson, defensive back, because, and this is something that Ian, you're on top of, and therefore the rest of us here at Steel City Blitz are on top of. We pay very close attention to who the Steelers talk to, when they talk to them, do they have them in for official visits? Do they not? Everything. And Mr. Wiggins is checking every single one of these boxes. All right. He was in today in Pittsburgh. And I have Artie Burns-itis. I'm not going to lie. I'm really, really hesitant to take a cornerback in the first round, largely because of that. Which is dumb, completely dumb. It does.
So what you're saying, Mark, is you were worried about taking T.J. Watt because we had drafted Jarvis Jones a few years prior.
I will not lie about that. I won't. I mean, I was kind of like, ooh, okay, nice pedigree. This guy's got some promise. He's turned out okay.
Just all right. I guess we did take Bud Dupree as kind of the stepping stone between.
That's true. Yeah. As I look at it, and maybe you'll see this differently, yes, offensive line is deep. And I think most of us would probably agree that is right up there with their top needs, okay, center tackle. I don't know that if we took a corner in the first round that we're really going to get the guys we want, either center or tackle, in the second or third round. Maybe one of them. But I don't know about both of them. So what is your thinking on this?
I would agree with that. And I felt for a while that corner is one of those positions just because of how hard it is to play in the NFL. You're better off going out and signing veterans that have played in the NFL for a couple years. Yep. I've said that before on the show. I'll say that again on the show. That said, if you're going to draft a corner, you have the most chance of success of picking one in the first like 40 picks, basically first round or top 10 picks of the second round is where you want to take a corner. Yeah. After that, it's pretty much a crap show. It's not great. You know, that said, you did mention, you know, the guys we pick in the first round are pretty much always guys that Tomlin and the GM went to their pro day. So you want to look at the pro days they went to, you know, they went to Alabama, they went to Clemson, they went to Michigan, and they went to Georgia. I think that's it. Was it only four this year? Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, and Michigan. Yeah, they only went to four this year. So that immediately starts to narrow your field for who are they looking at in the first round. And then you start to look at, okay, well, who have they brought in for visits? Who did they have formal meetings with at the combine?
Right.
Who did they have dinner with at their pro day? And now all of a sudden it becomes, you know, you want to talk about corners. Okay, you're talking Nate Wiggins from Clemson. Mm-hmm. You're talking Terrion Arnold from Alabama and Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
So they've put in a lot of time and effort on those three guys, you know, at cornerback. So I think corner is definitely on their radar. It's certainly a position of need.
Yep.
It would not shock me if they took one in the first round. And I think it all kind of depends on how the board in front of them falls.
Yes.
You know, if there's a huge run on tackles, there's a bunch of teams that need tackles. If there's a huge run on them and you're sitting there at 20 and you're like, I don't know, all the guys we like are gone. Corner's not a bad, it's still a position of need.
Yep.
And there's some decent guys. I don't think this class has a like top five, like Jalen Ramsey type cornerback.
No, I agree. Totally agree.
I think there are probably four or so that will go in the first round. They probably just all go, I think, in like the second half of the first round.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron mentioned Mike Sanders still out of Michigan. I who I love is just merely a nickel corner. He's not, he doesn't nearly have the size to play on the outside in the NFL. But he's a perfect inside guy, tackles well, covers well, does a lot of really good things. But I agree 100% with your take on the fact that there isn't that one stud corner. There's good corners and there's a lot of good corners. And I think because of the way college football has evolved, you have every year, you have a ton of wide receivers. And so therefore by almost proxy, I guess you have a ton of corners now. And, you know, and plus, I can't remember who mentioned this. I was reading, it might've been Mike Tomlin, the 7-on-7, the growth mm-hmm. of those 7-on-7 leagues in the high schools, has really increased those positions. The athleticism, the agility is already just a step ahead. So I guess if you told me that it was corner or wide receiver, I think they definitely would go corner before wide receiver in
yeah.
the first round. I'm just worried that we're going to miss, we're going to take something that's not a center or not an offensive tackle, and we're going to miss one of those really good ones. That I guess maybe that's my concern.
I don't think we're going to take a center in the first round.
Is that your kind of feeling? No center.
Yeah. Based on just, you know, who Tomlin and Khan went to see at their pro
right.
day. I don't think we're taking a center. Honestly, at this point, I think I could probably narrow down a list of like six guys that were between for our first round pick. Those three corners I mentioned.
Yep.
Amarius Mims, the tackle from Georgia.
Yep.
JC Latham, the tackle from Alabama. Actually, maybe it's just five. Maybe it's just those guys. That, you know, I think they're really starting to hone in on those five guys. And honestly, there could be five or six offensive tackles go in the first round of this draft. And they've spent a little bit of time with some of those other guys.
Yep.
You know, the Telis Fuaga from Oregon State, Troy Fautanu from Washington. Sorry, I can't pronounce their names. I think I got close there, though. But I'm pretty sure Pat Meyer went to both of their pro days. So, you know, when you start to look at – that's usually a sign if a position coach goes to see a guy, it's usually a sign they're looking at him for, like, second, third, fourth, kind of mid-rounds of the draft. But first round is really, like, Tomlin and Khan going to their pro day is what you want to look for. So as far as the guys who are first round talents plus, you know, that Venn diagram of having them at their pro day.
Yeah.
They only went to four this year. So it starts to narrow it down pretty quick.
Well, and forgive me if you mentioned this guy, but I was looking it up while you were finishing your comments. I mean, they've had in a young man out of Georgia State named Travis Glover. I don't ever remember them, and I'm sure they have. So don't, you know, hold me to this, but I don't ever remember a guy from such a small school at a position of need like that being brought in. I wonder if he wouldn't be, obviously he's going to be a later round option, But, you know, I mean, they've had other guys in from smaller schools. I'm not trying to say they don't do that. It's just at such a position of need. I was kind of surprised to see that.
They sent, I think the backup offensive line coach went to Georgia State's pro day. Hold on, let me look here. I know we sent some position coach to Georgia State's pro day.
Welcome in, Burner. Ben is not at a Coldplay concert, although that wouldn't surprise anyone. I think they're opening for Dave Matthews tonight.
It was Isaac Williams, the assistant offensive line coach, went to Georgia State's pro day. So they have looked at Travis Glover a little bit.
They've got a little history.
Yeah, but I think that's the kind of guy where, like, if you miss on one of the first round tackles, that's an option in the mid to late rounds of the draft.
And that's just my concern, because I'm so focused on we got to have a center. We've seen what happens way too often with this team when there's not strength in the middle. And you know, Mason Cole, God love him, you know, super individual, but it just wasn't there. And clearly the Steelers felt the same way, but they haven't addressed it yet. Now Tomlin gave it some lip service down at the owners' meetings. Said, well, you know, we still have Herbig. You know, I just can't see him being the starting center. I'm sorry. I think he's more of a reserve guard. So I guess that's what I'm worried about, because I don't know that I really want another year of Dan Moore at left tackle either.
No.
Which concerns me. And just catching up with some of the comments here. Barton from Duke is a guy that is getting a lot of attention, really athletic, really versatile. He literally can play anywhere on the line. And yes, Burner, he does have the T-Rex arms, and not as big a concern at center, a huge concern at tackle, obviously. And that's why a lot of people think he's probably going to be slotted in at a guard position, but, They love that versatility. Mike Tomlin loves guys that can play up and down the line. You know, now is he a guy at 20? I don't know. But he's definitely climbing draft boards right now. So you mentioned the five guys. Where do you see Terrion Arnold? Is he an outside guy or an inside guy?
I'm not sure, but he can play wherever he's at.
He's a player.
In the interest of full disclosure here, I haven't super dived into a lot of these guys. I've put together a spreadsheet, shocker, I know, on the guys that the Steelers have had a lot of contact with, but I haven't really watched a lot of them yet. So, that's kind of what I do first to kind of narrow my field, is I go look at who the Steelers seem to be showing interest in and then try and watch those guys. So, don't have a good sense of him yet. I will say on the center question though, while it may not be a first round pick, like Cedric Van Pran from Georgia, they formally met with him at the combine.
Yep.
Con Tomlin and Arthur Smith were all at the Georgia Pro Day, so interest there. JPJ from Oregon, Pat Meyer was at his Pro Day, Zach Frazier from West Virginia, Isaac Williams, the assistant O-line coach, was at his pro day. Plus he came in for a visit. So they have done some work on the centers in this draft class. And even some of the ones further down the board, like a Charles Turner from LSU, Andy Weidel went to LSU's pro day. That was the only one that Weidel went to. The kid from Florida, whose name I can't pronounce, Kingsley something, Agaakon, they met with him. He was at the Senior Bowl and they met with him at the combine. So they've definitely put in some work on this center class, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them take a center in the second round. But I think really, to me, that first round pick, it really seems like they're honing in on tackle and cornerback. I think, to Burner's question, I think wide receivers in play. I think wide receivers in play a lot more in the second round, where you start to look at what's the kid from Texas? Adonai Mitchell, was that it?
Yeah, A.D. Mitchell.
Yeah.
Yep.
They brought in Ricky Purcell from Florida for a visit too. I don't know if he's quite a second round guy, might be a little later, But even in the mid rounds of this draft are pretty deep at wide receiver, like a Keon Coleman from Florida State. Mm-hmm. I really like the kid from Virginia too. He's got a big body and some nice hands. Malik Washington.
Yes.
The other kid they brought in from USC, Taj Washington, has some really great athletic numbers. So they could find a wide receiver in the middle rounds of this draft that I wouldn't be concerned at all about. Yeah, you're not going to get we're never going to be in range for a Marvin Harrison or a Malik Nabers kind of guy.
No,
in this draft.
No.
So, you know, sorry, Aaron, to break it to you that we're not going to get Marvin Harrison Jr. I love Xavier Legette. If Xavier Legette is there in the second round, I think you almost have to take
it. I agree. And yeah. I am almost, I am really close to almost saying this might be a double dip year at wide receiver. We are so thin right now. Now maybe Mike Tomlin's got a lot more confidence in that room than I do, but I just have concerns there. Do I think it'll be in the first round? No, but I think when you look at what the Steelers like to do when they draft wide receivers, they like wicked athleticism, or they love precise route running guys. You know, when you talk about Deontay Johnson, good route runner. But, you know, you mentioned some. I would say Roman Wilson out of Michigan. He's a little small for my liking.
We do need a slot receiver,
though. But exactly. But, man, the guy runs great routes. He's tough. But, yeah, Xavier Legette, I'd love to have him. Some of the other guys, the two Washington kids you mentioned, Taj and the other young man from Virginia. You know, there's some really intriguing things. And, again, it would not shock me if we double-dipped there.
Luke McCaffrey from Rice, who they also brought in today.
He was in today as well, and he fits the route runner. He is a very precise route runner, whereas some of these other guys are more just, hey, throw me the ball, I'll figure out a way to get it, that kind of thing. So, you know, they've got to find, and again, that's the danger. There's no guarantee, but I'll also say this. I'd rather have this situation than have just made a trade like the Houston Texans did. For Stephon Diggs. Diggs is a fantastic player. Don't get me wrong, but I didn't want any part of him. And that's all I'm saying. I mean, especially at his age too.
I think what Houston did was smart though, that they put themselves in a position where they can cut him after 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, generally speaking, wide receivers, even the most biggest of the divas, the, you know, TOs of the world, Chad Johnsons of the world, I won't put AB in that category because he doesn't fit what I'm going to say, but most of them were able to hold it together for 1 year when they went to a new place. It was kind of that second year where they, you know, got a little cranky. So I think Houston did a good thing where they said, okay, Diggs, we're going to put ourselves in a spot where we can cut you after a year. Can you hold it together for a year and not be insane so we can try and go make a run here? And you know, that's why I always say there's no such thing as a bad 1 year deal, right? Cause if it doesn't work out, you just cut the guy.
Yeah. I agree with you.
So I think they put themselves in a decent spot. They did give up a little bit, but you know, at the end of the day, right. If Houston were to go out and make the Super Bowl or win a Super Bowl, like everything they do is worth it. Right. Tampa Bay sucked for 9 years and then signed Tom Brady and win a Super Bowl. Like, do you think those people in Tampa, when they won a Super Bowl, were like, well, we sucked for 9 years and we don't have a quarterback of the future. And what are we going to do? No, they're like, we're going to go try and win another one with Tom Brady. Cause we got Tom Brady, right? It's like, you know, the NFL's a win now league. And unless you have a guy like Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, then the Steelers are doing this too, right? We signed an old Russell Wilson. We signed Justin Fields, who we think has potential, but aren't sure where he's going to go.
Right.
But like the Steelers are in win now mode. They're saying, okay, we're going to try and go out, assemble the best roster we can for this year. And then we'll see what happens in the future.
I agree with everything you said. The NFL has always been about winning. It's a business. We all know this. I don't need to go in there. Into that area, but man, it really is a 1 year thing now, a year to year. I was trying to think of something else in sports you could compare it to. I mean, you know, you look at what the Dodgers do every year, but those aren't necessarily 1 year contracts though. So
It's almost it's almost similar to like how the Premier League works, because like, yes, in theory the guys are signed to like 4 or 5 year contracts, but if a guy wants out and wants to transfer, there's pretty much nothing that can stop him from like getting, you know, a transfer offer from another team. So
eventually it'll work.
Yeah.
You know, look, a lot of it, go ahead.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to talk about with the draft too, since we're talking first round picks, trading up versus trading down. You know, last year we made the move up a couple picks to get Broderick Jones. We're not really in a position this year, I don't think, where a team's going to want to spite a team behind them like Belichick wanted to do to the Jets. You know, I have a hard time, given all the needs that we have, I have a hard time seeing us move up more than like maybe 3 or 4 spots. Like maybe we want to get in front of Cincinnati so we trade with Jacksonville or Seattle.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I have a hard time seeing us move up. Moving down, if you get a desperate team, there's a lot of wide receiver needy teams behind us too. And I think moving down potentially could have some benefits, but I wouldn't want to move down too far that you would miss out on someone.
Right.
But, you know, there's always that feeling of like we talked about with Joey Porter Jr. last year, right? That we said, hey, if we take him at 17, we think that's a bit of a stretch, but if we get him at 32, that's almost a steal. You know, that like there's some of these guys, like some of these corners we talked about, like Wiggins from Clemson, like taking him at 20, maybe that's a little bit of a stretch. Getting him at like 25 or 27, that's a pretty good deal. So, you know, if we were to move down with a Green Bay, a Buffalo, someone like that, you know, we're not trading with Baltimore. We're not going to help Baltimore out. So take that off the table.
Take them off.
But a Detroit, a Green Bay, a Buffalo, someone like that, if they come to the table with a good offer, especially if they would offer us like a second round pick to move up, then I think you got to start to consider that, because really this team needs 4 starters right now. And we have 4 picks in the top 100, but you're not going to get a starter with a 98th overall pick in the draft. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them try and get, if they don't make a move on day one, I wouldn't be surprised on day two to see them try and either move up a little bit to improve their position or something. Because you need a center, you need a right tackle, you need a wide receiver, and you need a cornerback. And in some order, you got to find those 4 positions.
I'm always an advocate of trading back, but I do agree with you. In this particular draft, the way it seems to set up, I wouldn't want to go back too far.
Yeah.
I think if you go back 3-4 spots, maybe 5 max, and in the teams that you mentioned, Buffalo, he's got a reputation for willing to move up. Detroit, they have shown a willingness. They will do whatever is necessary to go get a guy that they want. And they're behind us as well. So I like that. I would love to go down a couple spots, still get a guy that we want, but maybe pick up a couple picks. I'm not overly thrilled if we pick up future picks, because I feel like it's got to be something now. You know, I don't want to get into that third round of 2025, 26. It just irritates me, but I get it. What do you think about linebacker? I'm just throwing that out there. Inside linebacker. Obviously the Patrick Queen signing was huge. Him next to Alandon Roberts, I think everybody's excited for that. We have no idea what's going to happen with Cole Holcomb. We don't know how serious the injury is. We know Quan Alexander would like to return. He's a free agent. He's got a pretty significant injury he's working back from. Do you see a scenario where they try to grab a guy like, you know, a linebacker in the 4th or 5th round, or 4th or 6th round, I should say, since we don't have a 5th round?
Yeah, the name I would keep an eye on is Trevin Wallace from Kentucky. Aaron Curry, our linebacker coach, went to his pro day. So, yeah, that's kind of the name I would keep an eye on. And there's some other decent ones too, you know, across the board. But linebacker is such a weird position to try and draft, because like
so different now.
Yeah, it's so different. And even if you look at like the guys who are the best linebackers in the league, right? Your Fred Warners, your Dre Greenlaw, a lot of those guys. I mean, Patrick Queen was a first round pick, but
yeah,
a lot of them were like second, third, fourth round picks that just they had it up here, you know, between the ears and were able to figure it out. And that's what makes the biggest difference at linebacker. So yeah, there's some good guys that you can find.
Jamie mentioned Wilson, kid out of NC State, and I love him. Yeah. I do. I mean, he's a football guy's football player, but the injury history scares me. I mean, he's got a boatload of past injuries, and I'm not saying guys haven't gone on to have nice careers after that, because they have, but that would definitely be a red flag for me with him, the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just kind of looking at who else, Curry did also go to Ohio State's pro day. So Steel Chambers and Tommy Eichenberg are names to watch probably in the later rounds of the draft there. Curry did go to North Carolina's pro day. Cedric Gray, the name to watch there. Terrell Austin was at Michigan's pro day, Junior Colson at linebacker. Austin was also at Clemson's pro day, but I don't see us getting Jeremiah Trotter.
He's an interesting guy. When you watch him play, you're like, okay, man, I get it. I see it with this guy. And then all of a sudden there's like this play where it's like, what the hell? I can't describe it. It was like a couple of plays I was watching him. He'll make a great angle to make a tackle. Then the next play, instead of blowing up a blocker to really shut down a play, he tries to cut past the blocker, misses the angle, and the guy picks up 10 yards. It's just like, dude, just take on the block and you got it, you know? You can't argue with the pedigree and the athleticism and stuff. It's just, some of that stuff that I see, but these guys are young too. I have to remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. Trotter especially is pretty young.
Yeah.
I saw him a couple of times actually in high school because he went to high school in Philadelphia, but
that's right.
To the all-star team at St. Joe's Prep, which is more a New York, New Jersey, Maryland recruited team that somehow they play like three games against Pennsylvania teams all year and then play in our state tournament and win it every year. And it's just, it's stupid. He played there. So I saw a couple of his games. And I know it's high school but I felt like in college it was kind of the same way, that there were games where he was like absolutely dominant, looked like the best player on the field, and then some games that he just looked completely lost and like had just like didn't want to be there. So I don't know. Yeah, Trotter's kind of a question mark to me, but I mean the pedigree's there, but I don't think we're gonna take him.
Is Martavis Bryant the last Clemson guy we drafted?
Oh boy. Maybe. They go to Clemson's pro day every year, though.
Every single year, you think, okay, Clemson. That's why I brought that up, because I think he's the last Clemson guy we've drafted.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they looked at ETN the year they took Najee Harris, and they took Najee over ETN.
Yes.
Which, yeah.
I mean, just for the amount of time and effort we put in with Clemson, it's just you'd think we'd have more draft picks, but
We have for a while there, Colbert like hadn't drafted a player from Alabama for like over a decade.
It was a long time. Deshae Townsend, wasn't it?
I think it was. Yeah. But we have now, you know, in the last few years taken, and I know Tomlin loves this and I know Colbert liked it, but Tomlin like loves this shit. He's like, I want guys who are winners. Like I want guys from winning programs. And you know, you look at who we've taken. We've taken guys from Alabama, guys from Georgia. So you can't argue with that either.
I couldn't. I mean, you
got to know how to win.
Well, and you said it at the opening of the show. I mean, look where Khan and Tomlin have been. They've been at Georgia. They've been at Michigan. They've been at Clemson. Mm-hmm. And what was the other one? LSU, maybe.
No, Weidel went to LSU.
But, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, yeah, they go places where, number one, you got a lot of options. And, I mean, all those schools, basically, they've got like 25 guys, you know, working out for pro days. So you never know what you're going to find. But 1B would be the fact these guys are winners and they play extra games every year. mm-hmm. which is also huge. So
and also let's not forget that Tomlin has said in the past, you know, when I go to a pro day, I always ask people, who am I going to come here next year to see? So sometimes he's going there not just to see the guys that are eligible this year, yep. but also to get a sense for who that, you know, this is a good college program. Who else is in the pipeline that I need to know about that's coming up?
That's a great point. Tomlin, if you talk to people in NFL circles, they will tell you that Tomlin is like the rock star that walks into these events, because people just kind of gravitate towards him and they love talking to him. And that's a big part of his paradigm, is he loves to talk to people, not just about you, not just about your teammate. Tell me about guys coming. Tell me about, hey, how's this guy? You line up from him a lot, or line up across from him a lot in practice. What kind of player you think he is? You know, and I always go back and I think of how many times I was told the Steelers were drafting Chase Winovich out of Michigan. Remember, that's it. It's Winovich. We're taking Winovich. And the whole time it was all about getting information on Devin Bush. And now, obviously, we know how that all worked out. It's what it is. But they do a good job of playing that game. And you really have to do that in the draft process. And you say all the things you want about Colbert. Colbert was really good. He was really good at saying a lot without saying much, you know, that old thing.
He did. He was great at that. And Colbert also had established a lot of really good relationships with people True. Across organizations. And sometimes, you know, the best information you get might not be from a coach. It might be from, you know, the secretary for the head coach of the football team. Like, Absolutely. How does this guy treat the staff? You know, Yep. what's this guy like when nobody's watching? That, you know, those are the kind of things that you know, you establish those connections. For a long time, they've had a really good source of information at Wisconsin with Paul Christ, who used to coach at Pitt. And, you know, those lines of communication are key. And Colbert had those. And Tomlin definitely has them. I think the other thing about Tomlin that's, you know, so engaging about him is not only is he like absolutely a football junkie and just loves this stuff. Like, he just Yep. loves to talk ball. But he's really personable too. And like, did you see the clip on Twitter last week where they were at the owner's meeting and he was talking to some reporter and the reporter mentioned that like his mom had surgery.
Right.
And Tomlin's like, let me call her. Let me talk to her. You know, I'll talk to her on the phone. Yeah. And, but like, you know, he's such a good people person like that, yeah. that, you know, he's so good talking to people in any situation and just loves to talk football that, yeah, he can talk to anyone at any level too.
He can, and you know, eventually he's going to be a lot like what you know, the late Chuck Knoll used to talk about, is that nobody does this forever, and eventually you go on to your life's work, and I really think that's going to happen with Tomlin at some point. I think he, as much of a football junkie as he is, I think he's going to find other ways to continue doing that. You know, I'm not saying it'll be after this year, because it, from all intents and purposes, it sounds like he's going to sign another extension coming up in July. But yeah, and I agree, George, getting team players is important. You got to have stars. You got to have guys that put butts in seats, points on boards. But man, you got to have guys that do the blocking and the tackling and all the other stuff too, that really makes it go. I totally agree.
Something else, that's a great yeah. point, George. And to build off that, something they've focused on in the past is trying to get guys who were team captains and yeah. get that leadership in the building. That I know in the past they've looked for that. And I know that's definitely a plus on their board if a guy was a team captain. So that's something else to look for. You know, that information is kind of hard to find sometimes.
It is
college players, but it's definitely something that I know they've mentioned, like in press conferences after they've picked a guy, like, oh, he was a team captain for 3 years or whatever.
Cedric Van Praan. Mm-hmm. Everything I have seen about that young man is not only is he a good football player, but team captain. And an extremely personable guy, great leader, well-respected by his teammates. You know, he fits what George is talking about. in that regard. Now, does that mean they're going to draft him? Well, there's 31 other teams. So that remains to be seen, but definitely a guy who would fit that exact mold right there. Do you see the Steelers at all drafting a quarterback?
Since we signed Kyle Allen, probably not until the sixth round. We don't have any seventh round picks.
Right. Two in the sixth, I think.
Yeah. I think yeah. three in the sixth, don't we?
Is it three? I thought it was three. Two-thirds, two-sixths. Maybe it is three. Jeez, I can't keep track.
Yeah.
I'll have to look.
Yeah, I thought it was three in the sixth.
I think that I agree with you, though. The Allen signing kind of makes me think that we'll probably just sign somebody in free agency right after the draft.
Yeah, I think the name to watch in the draft class is Carter Bradley from South Alabama. Tom Arth, our new quarterback coach, went to his pro day. That was, I think, the only pro day Tom Arth went to. I watched some of Carter Bradley. I was not impressed at all. He checks the ball down a lot. He doesn't. Yeah. I mean, he's got a little bit of athleticism, but I don't know. But, you know, you take him at the tail end of the sixth round. Like, we took that Olodokun kid from South Dakota State a few years ago in the seventh.
Right.
And they're just like, yeah, you're here for a camp arm. And then if you make the practice squad or whatever. But, I mean, I know they brought in Michael Penix for a visit. That may have been the one other thing I'll mention too with the pre-draft visits.
I know where you're going. Yep.
Is a lot of times they'll bring guys in to have their team doctors look at them.
Right.
And Michael Penix has an injury history, and you know, you get injury information on these guys at the combine, but sometimes you want to have your own doctors look at them too. So, you know, that could have been some of the Penix visit too. That said, like, if Michael Penix is there in the third round, like, you kind of have to take a serious consideration into taking him. I think he's probably I think he goes in the middle of the second. I would guess, you know, because there's a lot of teams in this draft where you've got like the top three teams on the board all need quarterbacks. But then you've got teams like a Denver, like a Minnesota, like a Vegas that are picking in that, you know, what, 7 to 12 range of the draft that also need quarterbacks. But then, like, are you taking the fourth best guy in the first round, or are you waiting to see if someone falls to you in the second round and picking a Bo Nix, Michael Penix, you know, someone like that in the second? So,
well, look, we know, Ian, that if you're a quarterback and let's say you're graded as a third round grade, you're going to go in the second. I mean,
quarterback overall,
or the 20th overall pick, which go back and listen to last week's show, especially the end. You're going to go around higher because there's such a desperate need for quarterback play. And I agree with you. I think teams are going to, I mean, look, Daniels, Williams, Nix, the kid from North Carolina, May. you know, McCarthy. I mean, if these guys are not gone by the time we get to the, say, 10th or 11th pick, I'd be stunned. I would absolutely be stunned. And do I think every one of those guys is a top 10 pick? Hell no, I don't. But that's what teams want. That's what teams need. They need quarterback play. And if you strike it rich, then great. And if you don't, you come back again and sign some or find somebody else. But, you know, so if those guys go high, now all of a sudden that pushes Bo Nix up. It pushes Michael Penix up. I mean, and even some of these other guys, like the Pratt kid from Tulane, I mean, they all start sliding up a little bit. Spencer Rattler's had a really nice pre-draft season. You know, he's done well at the combine. I guess his pro day went well. He's had some good visits. You know, so it's fascinating to me.
I actually watched some of Pratt from Tulane. He reminds me a lot of Kenny Pickett, as much as I hate to say it.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have a super strong arm.
Right.
I'll say Kenny Pickett in college, right? Like, he'll make aggressive throws down the field, but he doesn't have a super strong arm. And the level he was playing at, his arm could get those throws there.
Absolutely.
But against faster defensive backs, I'm not sure. He's got a little bit of athleticism, but I wouldn't go there. You know, I would almost rather, if I was risking it on a mid-round quarterback, you know, I would look at, if it was me, like a Joe Milton from Tennessee, the kid from Florida State,
Travis Jordan.
Travis Jordan. Thank you. So one of those type guys in the mid rounds. I know the Florida State kid's coming off an injury, but like Milton's got a big arm.
Mike, that arm is ridiculous. That should not be legal.
Yeah, his arm and his feet are insane. If he can figure out the rest of everything else and not make stupid throws all the time, but I mean, he's got the quickness for a guy. For being like 6'5", Milton runs.
He's a big man.
Insane, yeah.
Big young man.
Yeah. So, but I don't know. You know, I don't know if he's a long-term answer either. Rattler's on the smaller side. Rattler reminds me a little bit of like a Baker Mayfield type that he could go out there and just light. Actually, maybe Jay Cutler is a better example, that he could go out there and throw four touchdowns or four interceptions in any given day, and you never know what you're going to get.
No, you're literally flipping a coin with him.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about it. I wanted to talk too about defensive line and I wanted to get your take on this. What do you think the Steelers are looking for? Because look, just to rehash, Cam Hayward is towards the end here. Everybody knows this. Larry Ogunjobi, when healthy, plays pretty well. Okay. Give or take. Keanu Benton had a great rookie season. I think he was beyond what anybody expected in his rookie year. Are they looking for somebody that's more of a nose tackle type, or do you think they're looking for somebody that can play more that defensive end type in a traditional 3-4?
That's a great question. And I think you have to start with who's on the roster now too. You talked about the top three, but we've got a bunch of guys who have kind of been disappointments, right? Like Isaiah Loudermilk showed some flashes as a rookie, but hasn't done much since. DeMarvin Leal's had some injury issues, really disappointed. I thought he was going to be a good player in this league, and
I just
hasn't fleshed out. Montrevious Adams has outperformed, you know, what he was kind of coming out, and we signed him off a practice squad. He came in and really helped us for a couple years, and then but Benton's a better player than Adams, but we re-signed Adams. We also re-signed Braden Fajoco.
He's just a run-stopping space eater.
We have guys on the roster, but really, like, you know, if you asked me right now, I would say Hayward, Benton, and Ogunjobi are the only locks to make this team. Everyone else is between Loudermilk, Adams, Leal, Fajoco, they're all on the bubble, and they could all get surpassed. So you're looking at, you know, defensive linemen in the draft here. I mentioned Andy Weidel went to LSU's pro day. That was also the only one that Carl Dunbar went to. So then you're starting to talk about, you know, Mason Smith, a Jordan Jefferson, a Mekhi Wingo type guys.
Yeah.
And any of those guys, Jordan Jefferson played in the Senior Bowl. They met with him at the combine. But Mason Smith is, you know,
he's a freak.
LSU had some dudes on that line.
They had some serious dudes. The Mason Smith kid. If you haven't seen him, he is long and nasty. He's got some things to work on. That's why he's not, you know, going to be a top round kid. But man, there is a lot of upside with that guy.
Yeah. They've also brought in Braden Fisk from Florida State for a visit, as well as Darius Robinson from Missouri and Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa. So they have kind of looked at some guys in this draft class, but I feel like defensive line's probably a mid-round pick at this point. You know, we talked about those four positions that they absolutely need starters at that are probably your first four picks in, you know, day one and two of the draft. So I think defensive line's probably a day three pick. You kind of see who's left there.
The Christian Boyd guy from Northern Iowa, I watched a little bit of him yesterday.
You've watched more of him than I have then.
Well, he might be a player in the NFL. I'm just saying, I mean, he's got some ability. He's got tremendous size. I just have this feeling that he's going to be a guy that's probably, I'm not saying he's going to be a star. Don't get me wrong. He just strikes me as the type of guy that probably is going to make a nice career for himself in the NFL. One of those guys that plays 8 to 10 years, you know, just, you know, probably a two down guy, you know, cause he's got some abilities, but he got some limitations too. Have you seen the kid? And I cannot pronounce his name. It's like, he was at Clemson, and I think he played this last year at Duke. Ororo.
I mean,
you want to talk about a dude that is long, wicked athletic. He played mostly basketball. He didn't start playing football till his junior year of high school. And he is just, he's like baby Huey. I mean, he is still in the learning phases. His ceiling is huge. I think he's probably going to go somewhere in a third, maybe fourth. But he's a guy that if he's sitting there, I would love to experiment with, but that's the problem. I don't know that we really have the time to really experiment.
Yeah.
We really need somebody that can play.
Yeah. Ororo, they met with at the combine.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the whole slate of guys was at Clemson's pro day, including mm-hmm. Terrell Austin. So yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to see them, you know, go that route either.
And I mean, he fits that Steelers mold. He's big, athletic, and he has the long arms they love.
Yeah. To get up and block those passes.
Yeah, that, and just keep offensive linemen away from him. You know, and so I there's a lot of options there. Have you had a chance to see either of the kids from Texas?
Not really beyond like a little bit, you know, seeing Texas play.
Right.
You know, but and they had some guys there. I mean, they're Murphy's an impressive dude.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't know. I think Murphy goes a lot higher than where
probably
we're going to target a defensive lineman.
Yeah, probably. And we're really not, again, we have a few visits left. We've mm-hmm. used quite a bit of them. And I'm just kind of looking through some of the guys we've had in. I would love, you know, we've had Fiske in, kid from Florida State by way of Western Michigan. I'd love to see him come to the Steelers. That'd be a great story.
You and your Western Michigan guys.
Being a fellow Bronco, well, it didn't exactly work out for Chooks or who was the outside backer we drafted in the seventh?
Keon Adams.
Yeah, that's right. Keon Adams. Yeah. He's a great Mac player, but what are you going to do? Did you see us doing anything as far as punter? Do you think we're just good with?
No, they'll probably sign someone on the waiver wire. They're not going to draft someone, but because of how they run special teams in training camp, they usually have two kickers, two punters, two long snappers. Yeah. And sometimes those are either like guys that have been around the league or like guys that are just hovering out there in free agency that they're like, hey, we might have an interest in you, you know, come kick for us. And then if someone gets hurt, like maybe we'll call you, you know. And that happened with a kicker a couple years ago when Boswell got hurt, that they had him in. Was it Matthew Wright?
Matthew Wright.
Yeah. They had him in for training camp and they were like, you are good enough. You're not going to replace Chris Boswell, but if he gets hurt, we're going to call you. And he got hurt and they called him and he wound up being all right. Yeah, he made like what, three kicks in one game for him, I think.
I believe he did.
Yeah. So
I mean, he was accurate. He just didn't have much of a distance.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, nowadays too, just because a lot of these guys are trying to make names for themselves, like it doesn't hurt to come to a camp and kick and show what you can do. No. And maybe someone else notices you, or maybe that team calls you back in 2 years. So
you just don't know. And you have to put yourself out there.
Yep.
That's how so many of these guys get noticed. So before we wrap things up here on the show, and again, thanks to everybody being with us tonight. And thanks for those of you that watch and listen on your own time. Appreciate you guys. If you had to be, you know, the guy making the picks right now for the Pittsburgh Steelers and in the first round, I mean, you kind of lean towards corner earlier. I mean, is that what you're thinking, or? I think the board sets up wonderfully for us. Because everybody's going to go for quarterbacks. Yeah. And you know, somebody's going to want to jump up for a receiver or two. So that's just my feeling.
Yeah. I mean, and there's probably going to be three offensive tackles taken before our pick. I mean, I think easily Joe Alt from Notre Dame and Fashanu from Penn State go before us. Fuaga from Oregon State might go before our pick. You know, Cincinnati.
He's everywhere. I see him in the first round. I see him going in the second round. He's kind of all over people's boards.
Yeah. I mean, but I feel like the drop off at tackle is a lot bigger than the drop off at corner. So like, I'm a trenches guy, right? If it's me, I'm going out and I'm picking either Amarius Mims from Georgia or JC Latham from Alabama in the first round.
Yeah.
And then in the second round, I'm taking one of the centers, whether it's JPJ, whether it's Zach Frazier or Cedric Van Pran from Georgia. If it's me, that's where I'm going the first two picks. I don't know if that's where the Steelers go the first two picks, but to me, you build your offensive line, you protect your quarterbacks, you establish your running game, and then you go load up on cornerbacks later in the draft.
Look, there is a saying as old as time itself that in any sport, when you are strong through the middle, mm-hmm. you have a tremendous opportunity to be successful. You know, you look at baseball, catcher, pitcher, you know, short, second, center field. You look at basketball and hockey. Football's no different. When you have a quarterback, center, and defensively, when you're strong in the middle there, it makes a huge, huge difference for everybody else. And I tend to go with your thinking. And Andy Weidel didn't just come to Pittsburgh just for shits and giggles. I mean, the guy helped build the Philadelphia Eagles into a Super Bowl champion team by focusing on the lines. And I really think that's what they're going to try to do here. So I don't know what order it's going to be in, Ian, but I really think they'll take two offensive linemen within those first three picks. And that's the way I feel right now.
Yeah. I almost feel like unless something crazy happens, you know, I feel like the first four picks have to be center, tackle, wide receiver, and cornerback.
Like, agreed.
I don't see a guy at another position unless something insane happens, right? Like, unless Michael Penix is there in the third round, unless, you know, but even within those positions, right? Like, if Roma Duzier drops to you in the first round and you're like, well, shit, we're picking at 20 and Roma Duzier is still there, we have to take him.
Yeah, the last thing I was just going to ask you.
Yeah.
If you've got a guy that was guaranteed everybody's board, he's a top 7 to 8, 9 guy, and now all of a sudden he's still there at, let's say, 16,
mm-hmm.
do you go get him? I mean, that – God, I mean,
16, you got to give up a third round pick.
You're giving up a third.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know. That one's tough to me. It depends. I mean, I wouldn't do it for a wide receiver just because wide receiver's so deep.
I agree.
For a corner or an offensive tackle, maybe, but I don't feel like this is a super deep corner draft. But like, there's positions. Like David DeCastro, right?
Yeah.
Like he dropped because people were like, well, he can only play right guard. And we're sitting there at 24 and like, well, fuck, we need a right guard. And
God, that was a beautiful night,
like,
wasn't it?
He was predicted, like almost everyone had him as a top 10 pick in that draft. And then he's there at 24 and we're like, well, shit, we have to take him, right? Like,
that was a no brainer.
That was And kind of like Juju happened too, right? That it was like, well, he was so good, you can't pass that up in the second round. So, yeah, it's, you know, if they're, you always go best player available. And I said this a couple weeks ago on the show, and I'll probably say it again next week and the following week and the following week, that the Steelers get themselves in trouble when they try and reach for a position of need. The times they're successful in the draft is when they just take the best player available and say, we're going to find a way to fit him into our team and make it work.
Very true. And on that note, we'll leave it right there. Thanks, everybody. We are extremely grateful for you sticking with us tonight. Hopefully, Ben and Skirps will be available next week. We've
mark
got a
your calendars more. For our live draft show on the 25th, though.
Yeah, we will be live during the draft. We will. I'm just spitballing here, but picking at 20, we probably will pick what around 9:30.
Yeah, I think last year, I think we tried to start the show. We were picking 17th. We started the show around pick 10 or so.
Something
so maybe
like
this year
that.
We'll start the show around pick 14, 15, something like that.
Yeah, we'll coordinate it. We'll obviously let you know over the next couple weeks. But it's one of our favorite shows of the year. We're on.
And we go a long time that night.
We go a long time. We hoot, holler, bitch, complain, all those things, depending on who the pick is. So check it out. And again, thanks to everybody. Make sure you check out the site, steelcityblitz.com. And we are on all the socials. So check us out right there. But for Ian, this is Steel Dad signing off. And hey, go Steelers. You could say it, Ian.
Oh, Ravens suck. They there do. You. Yeah.
We're past 1 week now. The bridge.
Yeah, accident, so. Ben did a nice tribute to Baltimore.
He did. Very nice
week,
one. So we're back now. Ravens suck.
Good Ravens night. Suck. Yeah. There we go.
Good night, everybody.